Good morning. Today is Tuesday, the 28th of September. Joining us this morning. Yes, he's joining us now that he's swung the mic in front of him. Merritt Perry. Good morning, sir.
Morning. Great to be here.
You know, with the sunshine, it's kind of just fun driving slowly.
I don't know.
Anywhere.
I'll take some more rain.
You liked yesterday?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Would it clear out the gutters for you in town?
Ground's wet, less dust.
Yeah.
Get some good antecedent moisture before the real storms, hopefully.
Antecedent. What does that mean? Extra? Or precursor?
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
Before the main event.
Oh. All right.
Moisture in advance.
It's like a preface then in a book.
Yeah.
Or a foreword. All right, I got that. Why do auctioneers call out bids in that peculiar sing-song manner? I was saving it for Bone, but he hasn't shown up the last little bit, so you get it.
I think so they can have a continuous kind of vocal sound without having to have the start and stops to keep people's attention. Way off?
No. Way close. An auctioneer's rapid chant is designed to provide order to the bidding process and keep the bids coming in rapid succession. There's a great deal of uncertainty and hesitation among bidders at a large auction, and the chant acts as a steady cadence that urges the bidders to place their bids quickly. To control a very rapid bidding process, auctioneers had to develop an almost musical chant as the only means of enunciating the bids fast enough to keep up the pace. The chant is made to sound even more peculiar by the odd filler phrases auctioneers use to maintain the tempo of the auction. One such filler, "Give me the bid, a little bit more," which comes out sounding like, "Give me the bid, leave me more," it says. All this may make the auctioneers sound funny, but it's essential to the smooth operation of an auction. So we just kind of went somewhat to auctioneering there. School
yeah.
Here.
All right. Well.
Good summer, bad summer? So-so summer.
Good summer, I think. You know, minus the smoke and the fires, I think everybody's going to put that in the negative category, but... managed to, you know, enjoy myself a little bit, get out to the mountains before the smoke really set in. So that was good.
Got a little getaway time then.
Yeah, took both the kids to college out of state, drove them and had a little road trip and drop off. So
now, was the road trip good or the fact that the kids are going to college out of state good?
There's some positives to both.
Yeah. Other than out of state tuition.
Yeah, that's no joke.
Oh boy. What states?
Oregon and North Dakota.
You know how long it takes to establish residency in Oregon?
You can't when you're a student.
Oh, they changed it even after 3 years?
You can't. And in North Dakota, it's a year regardless of whether you're taking classes or not. Yeah. As a matter of fact, Brian, I have looked into that.
Yeah. Kind of sounds that way, Dad. Oh, what was I? North Dakota. I was with a couple guys from North Dakota last week. Yeah. It almost sounds like it'd be a fun place to spend some time.
Yeah, in the summer.
Yeah. I'm a fall, you know, to see the leaves change and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The mosquitoes are all dead.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about that. Yeah, it's not a bad time.
Yeah.
You know, ice fishing is not a big, it's not high right. on my to-do list.
You just have to adapt a little bit from river fishing to.
Yeah, that would be leaving the sandals inside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't bring your Birkenstocks.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure they make them in Bigfoot size.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah. Oh, gee. Was it the city that chose not to do the Apple Harvest Festival, or was it Cliff and the family?
It was the Apple Harvest Committee, and I think you know Cliff's a big part of that. So yeah, that was a bummer. We did get lucky this summer, and we got to pull off a couple of events right in that sweet spot. And you know, there was a lot of questions running into Rodeo Time and Auto Expo and. We were able to work with the organizing groups for each of those and really try to put together a plan that, you know, really could have been pretty tough to roll out. And then everything kind of dropped off except for mega events. So Rodeo Auto Expo hit that sweet spot where kind of the rules went away and we had an event and then it started locking up shortly thereafter again.
Well, so. Was there any I know they know. But I don't know if they share where the positives are, where they live. Was there any just Southern Humboldt Fortuna, Greater Fortuna just here, spike?
Just hearing back from the county, they said no. They said, yeah, there wasn't a spike following those events. But I didn't get too into it. You know, Rex relayed the public health officer's information to me. And, you know, I think there was concern about that with the events that we had. And, you know, but I did not see that and never reached back to the city saying, hey, this was an issue.
So the committee itself just kind of chose that they didn't want to push it?
Apple Harvest?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they decided, you know, it's been a difference. You know, that was kind of pre or Delta variant was just showing, you know, hadn't really shown up at that point. And I think the Delta variant showed up in Humboldt probably later in July or, you know, I don't know the exact timeline, but, you know, I just think the risk outweighed the gain for them. And sure, they'd love to have that event. And, you know, I don't know the calculus.
Well, maybe a street festival. Yeah, I mean, just spread it down along the street and, you know, do something a little bit more creative if they're so inclined, or Cliff's just going to have a lot of juice to squeeze.
Yeah, well, he was doing a brisk business. People better get down there. I saw the cider flying out the door on my way by yesterday. So.
Yeah, we saw it last week. It's like, okay, game on.
Yeah.
One way or the other. Have you had to put in any business-related? I was out of town last week in Michigan, and I think I shared, maybe I didn't, I don't know. There was one business that was not federally operated that required masks mandate. There's no way you're going to guess this one.
No, I don't.
You're not even going to try, are you?
You know, every business I've gone into has a sign that says mask required, you know, and so I haven't.
Back there, Joanne Fabrics. It was the only business.
That said they're required?
Yeah.
I thought
everybody else recommended it, but it's in Michigan, so it's a little bit different.
Oh, in Michigan. Okay, yeah. Sorry, I missed that part.
The word that starts with an M, ends with an N.
Yeah, traveling across the country and doing
things
a drive
from
Eastern Oregon to North Dakota, you don't see as much masking as you do in California. We'll just put it that way.
Oh, that goes under the heading of shock and awe. Oh, geez. Oh, KINS, News and Information Time. We'll recover. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbara Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Merritt Perry, city manager of Same Said City. Ooh, wouldn't that be cool?
I think we'll stick with Fortuna.
Have a city called Same Said City.
Same Said City. We'll stick with Fortuna, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, it's far easier to say. So what's the big issue that you're hoping to square up before the end of the year now? Is there anything that's out there looming? Some of these construction projects, weather like this week is allowing?
Yeah, you know, we're not kind of, we have one construction project. I might have told you about it last time, but they're coating our digester lid, which takes all the solids from the treatment process. But you can't control the humidity, and humidity is really important for painting. And so they put a tent around it so they can control it. So, you know, it's not as weather dependent when you can control the condition. So no, not too many big projects.
Is that one like the cement where it has to go with a slow dry? Otherwise it
even more, you know,
stick?
If you get moisture and you don't get a good cure on paint, it peels and it doesn't last.
Yeah.
and you get rust, and that's what you can't have, especially on a water or sewer facility.
Yeah.
So no, big focus right now, working on the mill site. There's some planning effort that we're working on there, where the city is working on a specific plan using some of the local early action planning money, also known as LEAP funds. We have a small grant.
Where's that come from?
the state.
Early action planning funds?
Yeah, and really it's intended to address housing. You know, the mill site creates somewhat of an obstacle for drainage in the surrounding neighborhoods. There's some properties that are designated for multifamily and housing. So our hope was to complete the specific plan and identify some of the infrastructure that'd be needed to allow some of the areas designated for multifamily to develop. So really following through with the state's goal of providing more housing. And, you know, in this instance where we have area that was already designated multifamily, removing some of those barriers, updating some of the planning work to see what could happen. And that's when I say the mill site area, it's not just the town of Scotia property. It's, you know, surrounding properties within that designated area.
Is it the Sphere?
More just other owned properties outside of the mill proper. But we submitted a Headwaters grant fund request to really get into developing some more options for the mill site and really help the community put forward a vision and identify appropriate land use and zoning. And so the city really hasn't taken the lead on that planning in the past. What's happened in the past is you've had, you know, different developers who'd come in. There was a big box model and they put quite a bit of work into that. I want to say that was like the late 90s. Maybe it was early 2000s. And, you know, they were
about the time we got blown out of Eureka too.
Outlet stores. Yeah. And, you know, so they put quite a bit of work into that, but it was really a developer-led effort. But what has it?
Is that proprietary information, or was some of the work that was done, let's say if they did the soils report, is that something then that is public knowledge?
The city has
that.
Those things can be available, and the property owner has quite a bit of information on, you know, what's in the soils and what's been done. And there's some areas that have some restrictions. And then, you know, utilities, the city has pretty good utility mapping. So one of the biggest barriers if somebody wants to come in and develop is they need to figure out what infrastructure is needed. And some of the basic ones are water, sewer, and drainage. Those usually you can figure out, but one of the more tricky ones for the city and something that we're making a push on right now is our interchanges. And they grade interchanges like they do a school assignment, A through F. And, you know, your grade is based on how efficiently or how quickly you move people through intersections or roadways. And so one of the obstacles that we have right now is we have 12th Street and Kenmar interchanges, which are on both the north and south side of the mill site, where those intersections are really outmoded. There's no pedestrian connectivity. You have some kind of odd intersection angles.
Who walks across an overpass?
Anybody who wants to go to the river. You know, there's some pretty daring people who ride bikes. So the whole Riverwalk area and all the trails, the Sandy Prairie Levee Trail, the River Lodge, you know, there's quite a few people who drive from one side to the other and park because there's no walkway. So,
oh, they've expressed an interest to being able to walk?
Absolutely. You see people that, you know, want to be able to connect the city to the river. And it's well documented that people really want to have that interface with the river and the city of Fortuna in the general plan vision. So
knock down the levee.
Well,
then you'll have a little interface with the river.
Yeah, I don't think that kind of interface. But people to be able to go over there. And so one of the things that we're making a big push on right now is we're working on the preliminary design and permitting for the Kenmar interchange, and that would go to a double dog bone, which is kind of the informal term, roundabout, like you have on Giantoli in Arcata.
And one at each end?
Yeah, and then we have another concept that we're trying to get funding for on 12th Street. But if a developer comes in and they're going to add a significant number of trips to those intersections, it could be something that is expensive, and it could be cost prohibitive if we require them to make some of those interchange improvements. So we've been really doing our best to have a meeting with Caltrans later this week, really just to share, you know, how important we think those interchanges are. And
so those are Caltrans projects rather than the city project?
Well, it's a Caltrans facility, but Caltrans, as of yet, has not really taken up a project on their own to provide pedestrian connectivity or help improve the level of service. And I think they look at more of the interregional projects. And when you find projects within, an incorporated area, it doesn't seem like those are as high a priority for Caltrans. And so I'm hoping that we can talk with them and really work to identify these projects as a priority. And they are assisting with the Kenmar interchange right now. So some of the planning work that's happening there. So I'm hoping there's more interest and with all these funds that are coming from the federal government or maybe coming, it'd be nice to see some of those focused on the city's interchanges.
In Fortuna.
That's right.
Yeah. KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Stupid.
Stand by playback.
And now,
live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Merritt Perry from the city of Fortuna. Merritt, with the attention that Humboldt State is getting going into the Cal Poly status, I guess that would be what it would be called, and the fiber optic stuff, you were talking about infrastructure with the mill site and future projects. Where is internet? Or that connectivity, is that still anticipated to be run up on the power poles? Or is that something that is undergrounded? Where does, you know, along with the sewer, that would be weird to have sewer up on power poles. No. undergrounded along with that, kind of like what they're doing in a bunch of areas when the trench is open, you drop another line in there and make it all kind of on one fell swoop.
Yeah, so then, you know, when a new fiber optic line comes in, and there's various utilities that want to bring that in, they're typically going underground, and they want those utilities protected, and they don't want them susceptible to an undergrounding project where they have to come in later. So the different proposals that we've had, or, you know, upgrades to the system by existing utility carriers, all of those have been underground. And, you know, if you're going
with separate trenches or in the same?
Their own trenches. And a lot of times they'll directionally bore them, and so the challenge with directional boring is when you have a city full of older infrastructure like gravity sewer lines, and you know, you really have
the
to
surprise?
Make sure that you're protecting yeah. those sewer lines, because when they directionally drill, they have, you know, high pressures in mud, and it wants to go to where there's a negative pressure or a
sewer. You just want to say no surprises?
Yeah. So you could do things, though. You could video your sewer lines before and after if they're going to be close, and you can have them go, you know, deeper, and you can specify what separation you want. So it's tough to always.
Is deeper better? I know it's probably more expensive.
If it's not your utility and you don't have to dig it up to fix it or tie into it, then it's generally better if it's just out of the way. And, you know, so the city would never have an instance where they need to go dig up a fiber optic line. So our preference would be have them below and away from us where we don't have to get into them. And to really have less encumbrances above our water and sewer lines.
Well, a lot of times when you see the guys digging in the streets, you might see their head or almost their head. Yeah, what's that, an 8-foot depth?
A lot of the trenches, so OSHA has requirements for shoring if you're over 4.5 feet. So
that's those steel
Yeah,
plates.
Really just yeah. to prevent cave-in. And so, you know, ideally for water, the minimum depth you can be to protect it, I think, is 30 inches. So they don't want it susceptible to surface water. So you have to have it at least 30 inches deep, and then you want it between 30 inches and 60 inches or 5 feet. So that way you're not in a trench where you have all the trench safety issues if you have to dig it up and put in a new tie-in or something. So it just makes maintenance easier if you do have to dig it up, not to go really deep.
So it's probably better to have a spider web of infrastructure rather than to have one that's a trench that's really deep.
Well, you want offsets. So you want sewer on one side of the road, you want water on the other side of the road, and you want them kind of separated so you can, you know, so you can work on them without being on top of each other. Of course, those things cross, and it's a complicated trench when you have fiber optic, water, sewer, storm drain all in the same spot, and it happens. More frequently than we would like, but it's, you know, there's kind of a standard where, you know, you have minimum offsets of water and sewer to meet public health guidelines, but really you want to keep them separated each side of the street, and then you just extend the laterals over to each of the properties on either side.
So you have areas where they cross, but it's not as consistent.
Right, and then it's the laterals and not the mains, and a lot of the protections for potable water lines, the protections and offsets are from the water mains.
So if you had a brand new development, not in a brand new city,
We do. We have brand new subdivisions right now that are going in. Yeah.
How do you prefer those things laid out? I mean, you don't want them underneath where the houses are going to be built.
Yeah. Well, and we have a standard, so you want it in the roadway so you can access it. You want water on one side, sewer on the other. And if you have storm drain, really you have to think about where the outfall is, but you want the proper spacing to take in however much water, you know, depending on your drainage area, you have to space outlets often enough so you don't pond up in your road. And now we have low impact development standards, so you have to infiltrate water and treat the 85th percentile storm, which is about the in Humboldt County, it's about the first inch of rain. So a lot of times the site grading.
So all that goes into the gutters and into the sewer system.
Is so
that
whatever's coming off the road in the lots would have to
captured.
Go. Yeah, is most often it's retained in earthen structures and infiltrated, if possible.
Infiltrated sounds like a military term.
Well, the way the water board treats it, if you have the storm water that comes off a road or a parking area and it goes through the soil, then the microbes treat if there's hydrocarbons or oil.
Oh, so
or
you
gas
want it just absorbed into the
right
the grass.
That's right.
If it's
and
a lawn.
So that's
yeah.
In, okay. And in the past, the idea was let's get all this water off the roads as quickly as possible, as efficiently as possible, and get it to the creek. So you get a couple of benefits from the low impact development or putting water into earth and structures where it can infiltrate. One, it'll take the peak off. You won't see all that water run into the creek all at one time. And then the second part, if you capture that first flush, which tends to have the most potential for contaminants, it'll infiltrate into the ground. It'll capture the trash. So you can...
The stuff that's on the road.
Well, that too.
So where does that go?
That would go into,
somebody's front yard?
Well, no, there's basins. So if you look at a lot of the new subdivisions developments, they'll have that water go to an area where it would actually go into a earthen kind of berm for retention and treatment. So that's
common.
Kind
of like that
now.
Thing up at Lafayette here that we're looking at all the time?
I haven't
it
looked
just
at that.
It has a little swoop. And
that's right.
It's there.
That's it.
Doesn't matter if there's clay underneath it or not, you do the swoop?
Well, you might have to make it bigger if there's clay or figure out another way to do infiltration. But, yeah, that's one issue up here is a lot of the areas where you do have clay,
blue goo
you can't
and
get
stuff.
Infiltration. That's right.
Yeah.
And so you have to dig it out and put other soils in where you can get that treatment.
Oh, really?
And infiltration, yeah.
Well, that's got to be delightful. What about sand and things that are super porous?
Then it goes too fast?
Yeah. Goes the other way.
We have a manual. It's called the Humboldt County Low Impact Development Manual. I'll have to go through it with you sometime.
Yeah, yeah. Bring it in on the trailer so we can look at the document.
I'll be reading some facts to you at the beginning of the meeting, and we'll see how well you do with some of the requirements.
Yeah, see how long the show feels that day. It's 8:43.
Hey, folks. Flying local is buying local. And with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt. More flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time is 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Merritt Perry. Merritt, the concept of the internet and building infrastructure and designing for all these things, there are cities that get it, and there are cities that don't get it. And there are councils that didn't get it 40 years ago when it could have been done, and those that did. How do you build for the future? Say Fortuna goes from, 12,000-ish? 12,000 to 15,000 to 25,000. Infill, a little expansion, a little this, a little that. Can the infrastructure that's in place now handle it? Because we're Main Street, Fortuna Boulevard, 12th Street, not the places where the new stuff is happening, but
yeah.
The major arteries that would be receiving the activity.
You know, it's all planning for all of them. It's kind of the same thing. How much can you put through something of a certain size, and traffic behaves a lot like water or electricity. It's all the same fundamental thing. How much can of something can you move through a fixed space or area, right?
The funnel.
Yeah. So one of the things we do at a city, actually, we just requested proposals for a sewer master plan. So a lot of times what you'll do is you want to update, you want to create a master plan, and you want to look at both condition and capacity for those different facilities. And it, again, it could be anything, water, sewer, roads, and you want to update those at a somewhat regular basis. And when you, you know, a lot of
times... That's probably what doesn't happen then. Well, it's the updating on a regular basis that things kind of get slip away.
Right.
And now 5 becomes 15, becomes 25, and you wonder why are there clogs.
So the first question is, how much capacity do you need? And then to figure that out, you have to say, what's our planned growth? So if you're looking at water or sewer, you know, you're going to have to look at each neighborhood and say, how many people are going to live here? How much water do people use? You know, how much? And then but that central question, we're going through a wastewater treatment plant upgrade project right now. We're in the design stage. Very important. What growth are we building this for? And what ultimately is going to be our build-out size? So,
do you go projected growth plus 20%?
Well,
I
think you look at historical growth and you look at trends, and the projected rate for Fortuna when they did their general plan in 2010 was 1.6%, which we haven't come close to capturing that. But I think lately we're seeing population numbers go up. So
yeah, then you get shifts and changes outside that are unanticipated.
So it's probably, like most things, it's probably better to over-project a little bit than under-project, right? Because the way that you save your citizens on infrastructure is you build it right and resilient the first time. Because if you have to go in there every 10 or 15 or even 20 years and you're up doing a new treatment plant project, those are really expensive. Or if you're having to upsize mains, you want to make sure you get enough capacity in whatever it is you're building so you don't have to go back, because it's expensive when you go back.
Well, and a lot of times when you buy the capacity, the difference between, let's say, 80% and 120% isn't that much.
That's right.
So why?
Because you have a lot of fixed.
Why not
costs?
Always be building it out? Well, and whatever the discounting that you get also.
If you model a sewer flow and it comes back that you need a 6-inch pipe, put in an 8. You know, so
which doesn't sound like much, but it's a huge.
It's a big difference in the cross sectional area and the potential flows. So, you know, in the city, when we review these plans, we'll look at what somebody comes up with, and then we have the ability to put conditions on development and tell them what size and look at their modeling, and we have minimum standards. So. Yeah, that's part of the fun, is trying to stay in front of that. So right now we're getting ready to go back in and look at our master plan. You know, we are a little bit behind on our water master plan. You know, that there was one done quite some time ago, and a number of projects were put out. The city actually sold bonds to be able to pay for the improvements. And, you know, some of the big improvements were, you know, lining the Vanshull Reservoir, building a new tank at Stewart Tank. So really looking at the storage needs of the city, both for the operational capacity to make sure people have enough drinking water, but then also emergency capacity. So are there fires? And, you know, it was pretty cool. I worked on the construction of the Stewart Reservoir, which is a 2 million gallon new reservoir. And there was a couple of smaller, there was, I think, 250, so 500,000 gallons up there. So we quadrupled it. Right after that project was finished, so we had the Star Hotel fire.
The fire of Maine,
right,
yeah.
Right, so we had all of our pumps, which are pumping groundwater, operating. We had the Stewart tank. We had the Vanshull Reservoir. And so it's, you know, you can monitor those levels in real time of what everything's doing. And to see your system handle, you know, that much of water demand, you feel pretty darn good.
Good decisions made.
But those are made in the past, you know, so you can't wait and get behind until you have a problem. So important to be proactive.
All right. Well, I guess that means you're going to get to work early today, huh?
Oh, man. My list is growing.
All right. Well, hopefully we're not adding to it here. Thanks for coming by.
My pleasure.
See everybody tomorrow.